Welcome to Real Jam Radio. I'm Daniel Wu, your host, and so happy to have you with us for this episode. This is the first round playoff preview, and it is with Arturo Galletti, one of my favorite guests. And I like doing the first round with him because he has a model that he uses, and he'll allude to it during our conversation. And I think that's a nice way of thinking about the first round. And then we'll have different guests each round to preview that, and then of course have other podcasts around it on various topics. I want to do some on eliminated teams and of course the draft and everything else. So this conversation runs about an hour 15. For those of you who are interested in timestamps, those should be available in the description, and depending on how you enjoy this podcast. So if you want to skip to something specific, you should be able to do that. Thanks so much for coming on.
It's a pleasure to be on again, Danny.
This is going to be a very interesting first round. From what I recall, we did the first round preview last year. And do you want to start by just kind of going through some of the major considerations you make when building your models?
Yeah, I think there's a pattern to history in the NBA of teams that win and teams that don't win. Now, the regular season can be unpredictable, but the playoffs become a lot more predictable. Obviously, you're looking for the top tier teams, but you're also looking for teams that have been there before, because there's a certain thing that happens in the NBA, which is like teams that have been there before get more calls. They also have more experience. They know the situation. And their coaches know what the hell they're doing, right? So if you look at the history of the NBA, it's only seven teams that are actually won the title. And like the same teams kind of repeat and repeat and repeat. Something like what the Warriors did last year, which was making it all the way to the finals and winning, was kind of unprecedented because they'd never actually made a final before. And that's kind of strange. And actually, I think one of the things that actually played to their how hard it was for them to beat the Cavs was the fact that teams like that don't get calls in the finals. Like the refs really don't give them any respect. And you can kind of, if you put your mind to it and you remember the Thunder making the finals 2011, and then Harden not being able to do anything in that series. Well, Harden's game is entirely predicated on him getting calls, and he wasn't getting a single call in that series. And it's just kind of like the growth period. But so one thing to keep in mind before going into this, the Warriors had a harder road last year than they're going to have this year, because last year they were the challenger. This year, they're the champ. And there's a saying in boxing that you have to beat the champ. Champ wins all ties. And the same thing kind of applies for the NBA.
And it's definitely interesting. I mean, I think that a factor going the other way, of course, what will have to depend on what goes on the rest of the year is health. But in terms of the structural advantages, the Warriors do have some major help. And do you want to just get into this, kind of going through it, explaining it with the first series, which the first one we'll talk about is the 1-8, which was the Western Conference Finals last year, Warriors-Rockets.
Warriors-Rockets. Yeah, the Rockets kind of backdoored into a playoff spot at the last possible moment. And good for the Rockets. I don't think that it bodes well for the chances. I think this team is outmatched. They don't have the home court advantage. I mean, who would you say is the better coach for both these teams?
Well, I mean, I think Kerr is clearly better than Bickerstaff right now, though I think the Rockets, one of the structural things that should be better for them is I don't think it's possible for them to care less on defense than they did during the season.
Yeah, if you're Danny the GM, if you have a choice, do you take Bickerstaff or you take Walton to be your coach?
Walton. He did really well.
Yeah, so it's the bench coach is better than the head coach for that team. So, I mean, they get the advantage of coach. That's one of the factors we look at. Obviously, who's more experienced in the playoffs? Is it the Rockets or is it the Warriors?
It's closer than some people think, especially with Dwight's history, but the Warriors got more experience in the playoffs last year. Also, Ariza has a title, but the Warriors have more experience top to bottom.
After you get, it's just that team's such a train wreck that I'm I don't trust them to actually get that. And the Warriors just have this killer instinct that's just kind of, I think this series, and again, I think the Warriors are a team that remembers. They remember having the Rockets winning some games they probably shouldn't have last year. So I think this is actually going to get ugly. I don't think this is even, I don't think this goes five. I think this goes four, and it's going to be somewhat ugly. Do you disagree with me on this?
I think it's going to go five just because the Warriors will have one of those complacency games, which is actually sort of beyond Curry getting hurt in that game. It's kind of what happened in game four of the Western Conference Finals.
This team is wired like the Bulls, which is they don't when they get into those complacency games, they just pull that fifth gear out and just kind of just destroy. All of a sudden, Curry will start making shots from half court and the other team will curl up and die. I don't see it. Particularly since they were playing half speed, they were playing the fourth quarter. I think that this really, if this was another team, I could say that. So if they're playing Utah, Maybe, but like Houston, they don't like Houston. They really don't like Houston. Like, and this team kind of, I mean, you've been around that team. This team takes grudges seriously.
They do.
That's my interpretation. I mean, I feel like they're going to try to put 40 on one in one game. I really do. I mean, they don't like this team.
Yeah, one thing I will mention, though, from the odds that we're going to work with Sports Interaction, I actually think that the Rockets at plus 7,100, meaning if you bet 100, you get $7,100, is actually not the worst thing in the world just in terms of disaster potential. It wouldn't be, you know, I'm not saying necessarily like throw 100 on it, but that's a pretty crazy return for not that much. For, you know, if you lose that $50 or $100 or whatever for what you would get.
Yeah, I mean, there are more interesting serious prices out there. I don't think if you want to throw your money away, I wouldn't put money on like the words are like 7,100. So like it's $100 to bet 7,100. Did I tell you I saw Curry? Curry was basically better than even against the field to win Finals MVP in one of the sites in England, which is kind of crazy. That means you bet 100, you get 90 if he wins Finals MVP, which is just insane against the field.
Yeah, that is incredible, especially considering they won the title last year and he didn't win the MVP.
Cool Warriors topical question before we move on. So we were talking about this last night. Kobe set the record for field goal attempts in a game last night, 50 field goal attempts. If you knew that Steph Curry was shooting 50 field goals tomorrow, where would you set the line of him in terms of points scored?
75 or 80?
I had 85 in my... I kind of think it would be something like 85.
You'll be amused by this. We actually talked about that at Oracle last night. So a few of us did, about the idea. No. It was amazing.
We were going, if you knew he was shooting 50 field goal attempts, what would you set the line at? And I think you'd have to know that he's shooting it, because like it's almost like if he's shooting 50, he's only shot, I think his career high is 32 field goal attempts in a game, because like when he shoots 32 field goals, the other team is so far down that basically he'll end up not playing the fourth quarter, right? He really, the best analogy I've come up with him right now, he really is Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
And the analogy is like, you know how Babe Ruth would have been a Hall of Fame pitcher, right?
Of course, yeah.
And then same thing. I think Curry would have been a Hall of Fame player as a conventional point guard, but they basically took him and made him do something that nobody else has ever done. And that 3-point number is pretty much like Babe Ruth's home run number, which is like, it's just completely insane and it just completely breaks the game.
I think the analogy actually works both ways as well, because I think he would be a fringe Hall of Famer if he was more of an off the ball shooter too. I think he would be the best off the ball shooter of all time as well.
Oh, he could totally be Ray Allen. He'd probably be like a fantastic version of Ray Allen. And I was thinking about this, and he also, like, everybody, he doesn't look like what people think the prototypical ball player does. It's the same thing. So it's a Babe Ruth is a good analogy. In this analogy, Michael Jordan is Ty Cobb. But yeah, I mean, I think we can talk about the Warriors a little more, but I mean, I think, like, if you expect the Warriors to lose in the first round, good luck.
Yeah, I don't expect it to. I just think that 7,100 is a whole lot. You know, there's always the potential of Patrick Beverley, you know, running into his knee or something like that.
I mean, yeah, you're basically betting on him getting hurt. And I don't think, even if Steph Curry got hurt, I think the Warriors are good enough to beat the Rockets, right? So I wouldn't worry about them in this round, in that scenario.
But we'll move on to a team that even though they have better odds, higher, you know, like you would get a greater return that I would never put a single dime on. And that's the Memphis Grizzlies, because they are hurt and they are running into the buzzsaw that is the San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah, the Grizzlies are really well coached. I actually, obviously the San Antonio has better playoff experience, because like, I mean, like the guys who are on the Grizzlies are not the Grizzlies. It's like the D-League. It's like Dave Yorger has really done like a fantastic job, just a fabulous job with just the dregs of humanity. But really that kind of stops now. I mean, like he's not going to get like the Spurs B team. He's going to get their A team. Well, actually, I think this is going to be the Bobound series, but like even the Spurs B team, like playing like they care is probably too much for this Memphis team. I mean, they'll compete. I just don't think that like, I have enough respect that I'm treating this as coach even. Like I'm not giving Popovich an advantage over Yorger. I mean, am I being fair here?
I think that's a little bit unfair to Pop, but not so egregious that I'm going to be up in arms about it. But yeah, I would take San Antonio's second unit over Memphis's first unit right now.
But do you think, like, I mean, like, this is like the football game where, like, the football coach decides I'm not pulling out any tricks. So I don't think Pop is going to pull out any tricks in the series.
Yeah, that's true. And Memphis is playing hard. You know, they played hard last night. And they, you know, they actually played two very strong games against the Warriors. More the first one recently.
It'll be pick and post and iso plays for Kawhi. And, like, it's not going to be, I don't think there's going to be anything weird going on. It's gonna be like the second half of any game of the Spurs versus the Warriors this season.
So is this a series just kind of not really to bet and just assume that it's gonna go to form?
I mean, my model thinks it's four. I think that the Spurs maybe sleepwalk to one of these games and it's five. I mean, I'd like it more if like Memphis wasn't completely decimated, right? But like, I mean, they're scrappy. The problem with the Spurs teams this year, and this is why they were so the Warriors were historically good, but so were the Spurs. The problem with the Spurs is like, so they're playing, they really haven't played at fifth gear, but their fourth gear, and the guys they have, we've talked about this before, the guys they have on the second team, I mean, like, when you're rolling out Boban and like Kyle Anderson and all these guys, that's not a bad team. So like, the Spurs not trying hard is still kind of way too much for like a non-good team to handle.
Yeah, right? I think that's definitely fair.
It's it's like you've seen Boban where like when somebody tries to take the ball away from him, he puts the ball in the air, and like the player just looks like a little kid trying to get the ball. That's kind of how I see this series going.
Yeah, and Memphis doesn't have a ton of legit healthy size, so he could even do that, you know, with depending on who they actually put on the floor. But unless you have something else on that, we're going to get into more interesting territory with Thunder-Mavs, and I think your general conceit is that the Mavs have been disrespected in terms of their potential in this series.
Yeah, I mean, like, I mean, here's the thing. I think that the Thunder clearly win this series, but the Mavs are going off at plus 600. That means they're going off at 6-1. Now, here's the thing. I would say this is, in terms of playoff experience and swagger, this is neutral. The Mavs have a lot of playoff experience. In terms of coaching, last I looked, Billy Donovan has not won a playoff series in the NBA. And Rick Carlisle is a really, really, really good coach who can figure out a way to take advantage of it. Now, they're banged up, but, like, I mean, I have the odds of, like, the overall odds of – I actually have the odds of the Mavs winning this series at around 8%, right? So, I mean, I think of that 6-1 is to me an interesting number. That's one where you might kind of look at throwing some shekels on it, right? I mean, I think the Thunder are obviously the better team. I just think that there are scenarios in which, what if like somebody rolls an ankle, right? And like this team, the Thunder have had scenarios where somebody's rolled an ankle, gotten injured before. And again, the Mavs are a good veteran team. Like they've been banged up, but like, I mean, I think putting them at plus 600 is a bit disrespectful. I think like plus 300 would have probably been the right number. Like 3-1 would have probably been the right number. I mean, what do you think, Danny?
I think that there's a difference in this, and I think this series is probably the best example of it, of a series that I think could go longer than people expect, mm-hmm. but that I still think the Thunder are going to win. So, like, if you could somehow make a bet of, like, hey, this series is going to go, let's say, 6 or longer, then that would be an interesting thing for me, because I think that's possible. I don't think it's necessarily likely.
And for people with degenerates out there, you totally can make that bet. And yeah, so yeah, I think
this is the advantage of having somebody on who knows how to do that sort of thing.
Yes, you can go and get like serious length. And I think Thunder in 6 and Thunder in 7 are probably interesting. Actually, 5, 6, and 7 are probably interesting. I'd have to see exactly what the price is.
I don't feel like they're going to sweep. They certainly could. I'm not disrespecting their talent, but that team doesn't feel like one of those teams that's just going to do that.
I think this Mavs team is better than the team that took the Spurs to 7 games last year.
I think they're a little bit worse, but not much.
They had
Tyson Chandler last year, and he was playing pretty well.
I don't think this Thunder team is as good as the Spurs teams last year.
That's also fair. The Spurs team last year was dangerous until somehow they lost. You know, we could talk about that series at some point.
Yeah, Pop got into Kawhi Leonard's head in the. I don't know why he did. I mean, Chris Paul had an out of body experience, and like Pop got into Kawhi's head in that series too.
Yeah.
You bench him at one point, but it happens when you're playing against a guy who's probably one of the top 3-point guards in the history of the NBA.
I think he certainly is, and that unless you have more to say on that series, I think that's as good a lead-in as we'll ever have to the marquee first-round series in the Western Conference, which is Clippers-Blazers.
I think this series is more, how should I put this? This series is more fun on paper than it might be in real life. Like, well, here's
I agree
the,
with that.
I mean, I actually like, so I have the swagger for both these teams is even, which may be kind of unfair to the Clippers, but they're the Clippers. They have a tendency to like, to just like go completely mental in the playoffs. Between that and like the same thing with coach, I think like Portland is a very well coached franchise, and they've kind of like the coach has been there before, and some of the key guys have been there before. I basically have this going 5. I think the Clippers are actually, I mean, like I was particularly with Blake back, they're clearly better than Portland. That said, Portland is a really tough place to play. And, I mean, let me see, like, the this series is going off at Portland's getting plus 200. So basically, like they're going off only a 2-1. So basically, they view it as competitive, but they're kind of viewing it as like maybe this thing goes 5 or 6, right? I think the Clippers have to be real careful. They're not seeing a 7th game in this series. Because I think if they don't close it out in 5, I don't think they close it out in Portland. And I think then they have to come back to game 7. It's the Clippers that'll be, like, we've seen this before. The Clippers get into a tight 4-5 series. That 7th game is going to be a nightmare for them. Because they just, like, their fans just kind of, the building kind of closes up. And, like, they just, I've seen these guys collapse before. They should win, right? But I really want to see them do it.
Yeah, this series is weird for me because I've been a fan of this Portland team for a long time. You and I both loved their over back when we did over-unders at the beginning of the season. And part of it is that they have a competitive advantage on almost every team because they have two guards that can create for themselves and others. And the Clippers are a team that, as good as Portland's strengths are, they have similar strengths and I would say superior ones. Chris Paul, yeah, at this point is better than Damian Lillard is. J.J. Redick is better than C.J. McCollum is. And DeAndre Jordan, I think, could be one of the biggest difference makers in this whole series.
If Blake Griffin had been healthy for the last 3 months, there's nobody on Portland that can cover Blake Griffin.
Right.
There isn't. Blake Griffin is a problem. So, but he hasn't. So I don't know. And we've kind of talked about before how like Chris Paul and Blake Griffin isn't exactly an ideal fit. So I'm kind of worried that and not Doc, but some of the mental giants on that bench are going to get confused. And I'm not. Again, I could totally see like McCollum or Lillard just like winning one game.
Dropping 15. I could see this going 5, 6, 7 easily without a doubt.
Here's the thing. I think the key number is like either the Clippers win it in 5 or this goes 7, right? I think that's kind of where this kind of sits.
Yeah, I think that's fair. If the Clippers won that 6th game, in some ways that might be the trademark win to this point of the Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan era.
Yeah, but here's the thing with that Portland team. Like, that, it's a building. Like, again, I kind of think, like, if Portland gets it back to Portland for a game 6, you know they're going to be, like, that building's going to be insane. That's a really tough place to play. And, like, you know, we know that Lillard kind of feeds off that crowd. He's better at home. Same thing with McCollum. So, in game 6, that I would be, like, I mean, I wouldn't be more impressed than beating San Antonio last year, but, like, it would take some doing, right?
Well, yeah, and you're also, to me, part of that is that presumably they'd be beating a full-strength Blazers team, and, you know, the San Antonio wasn't all the way there last year. And anything else in the series?
No, I mean, like, again, I think Portland's going to be real. I've said this before. I think Portland is a team that's going to be, has a really nice future. I mean, they've got, like, some really nice pieces. It's a cheap team. It's a very nice place to play. People like the Northwest. So, I mean, like, I think this is a team that, like, is going places. This year, I think, is just way too soon. Right? I mean, I think if it was another team that hadn't been there before with some of the key players, then it'd be happy to be there though out in 5. But, like, the matchup is just kind of wonky.
Yeah, it is wonky, and I think your point about Portland being a long-term team is really well taken, and analog that I would make is to a team that you're very well connected with that we'll talk about later is Boston. The idea of having a good core right now and the ability to add on top of it has the benefit of the Brooklyn picks, but I think Portland can do a nice job. You know, they have this group, and they can just add a couple guys on top of it.
Yeah, exactly. So is there anything – what's the thing you're looking the most forward to in these Western playoffs?
In the first round, I think it's going to be how Oklahoma City plays because I think they're the biggest wild card in terms of the long-term arc of the conference. You know, like the conference in the playoffs itself, you know. Warriors, we know what they are.
What's really interesting is if you really look at Oklahoma, right, their measuring stick and their nemesis has really been Dallas, right? It's been Dirk and it's been Dallas. And it was a team that was in their way for them. It was a team that they had to beat to get to the finals. And I kind of think this is it's very kind of fitting and poetic that it's Dirk at the end that they're getting now. And I mean, again, there's a real shot that this is the last Kevin Durant OKC team that we're gonna see. And I know you've talked about him like kind of taking the one year deal, but I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff in play. I really do think there's a real chance he's not back next year, right? And so it's a really interesting kind of. You know, this is a turning point for that franchise because you know, things could go really poorly out of this series.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack with this Thunder team, and they also can't look past the Mavericks. I think in that way they were a little bit fortunate to get a team that they know well, and but they still should beat in the idea, because they're going to have to play the best series that they have as a collective to beat San Antonio in round two, if that's what happens.
Right. They're getting a team that's not a pushover. So, I mean, like, I think that they're going to get challenged in this first round. And I think actually, I mean, I'm not 100% sure they're, I mean, I think they win on sheer, like, physical talent, but, like, it's going to be an interesting series. I mean, I agree. I think the Thunder Mavs could turn out to be the most, I mean, like, again, it depends on really how healthy the Mavs are, if they can answer the bell. But I do think that has the potential of being the most interesting Western series. I mean, other than, like, Portland kind of getting the Clippers to start having flashbacks, right? But yeah, I mean, I think those are the two kind of interesting series. The other two are we're just kind of marking time.
We're rooting for no injuries in the other two, really, is what's going
right
on.
I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I think there's a shot that Steph Curry doesn't play a fourth quarter in that first round series.
Yeah, I think Houston will sneak a game at some point, but if it goes four, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I'm not convinced of that, because I do think that the Warriors are going to try to make this as bad as possible.
While the Western Conference is a little bit clear cut in the first round, of course, after that it's going to be very different. I feel a little bit murky about every single Eastern Conference first round series, and we'll start at the top with the number one seed, not overall, but in that conference, the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are facing the Detroit Pistons, who played them very well this year.
Yeah, the Pistons played them very well. They have size, and Drummond kind of is a problem. And here's the thing, this is a very interesting series because Detroit's going off at 8-1. They have some players.
They have the coaching advantage.
They have the coaching advantage. Stan Van Gundy is a better coach. I mean, like, I think it's fair to say Stan Van Gundy is a better coach than Tyronn Lue. Like,
that is not a stretch in the least.
That is not a stretch. Like, Van Gundy understands what he needs to do. I mean, definitely, like, you know, Cleveland has a swagger. I mean, they've been there before. They've been to the finals, and that plays into it. But I mean, if there's a team here that could self-destruct in a stunning way, the Cavs are it, because really we know enough to kind of know that team is a bit dysfunctional. Right now, again, LeBron is still LeBron, right? And I think that's probably going to be enough. But I mean, again, I think 8-1 for the Pistons, that's too high. That's really too high, because this is a team that's done decently against this team. I mean, again, I think what's going to end up happening is I think this series has a I think it should go five, right? But, I mean, the Cavs might mess around or get into the game because they don't have enough size to throw at Drummond. And if Drummond can stay out of foul trouble, I think this can actually get stretched. I do think five is probably the right number. But I think, like, it's going to be a five-game series where, like the Mavs have to, like, the Cavs have to work for it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be five or six, and I'm a little bit skeptical. We'll have to see if Tyronn Lue can use some of the kind of counter advantages that he has. So, like, for example, they should be playing Channing Frye and Kevin Love at center a lot when Andre Drummond's on the floor, just to pull him out from the rim to open up space for the drivers. But Lue has preferred to play Tristan Thompson during some of those big startery minutes, and I think that won't work as well against Dallas. I mean, Detroit.
You know what the key? I mean, like, here's the key. One of the keys for the Cavs, and I probably shouldn't say this on the podcast, but I'll say it. What the hell? Kevin Love is better when you play him with an actual point guard. So if if you look at the splits, he's much better when he's playing with Maddie. And Maddie's actually a good defensive point guard. So there's some value to, if I were running this team, I would probably consider running Adeli, K Love second shift. Hell, I might not even start Kevin Love. I might play him like off. I'll still give him 35 minutes, but I try to get him more playing with Dellavedova than I would with Kyrie.
So there are a series of guys in the league, I've been talking about this more openly recently, that I think, the term I use is quick hook. So basically what they do is they should start, DeMarcus Cousins is another one of these guys. You start them, you pull them early, like 4 or 5 minutes into the game. And so basically, even though they nominally start, and I would say in most circumstances close, just depending on context, their primary responsibility is anchoring the second unit, particularly offensively.
Well, we talked about this in our last podcast, what they do without the smart teams do. Al Jefferson, right? We talked about this. Like,
yeah.
It's a guy. Cantor is a guy who can be like that too. Right? The problem with Cantor is Cantor, you kind of really have to have him on the floor. Like, you need Ibaka out there with him carrying him on defense. And, like, Donovan has figured that out. But I think there's a real advantage to, like, you need Kevin Love with an actual point guard and an actual offense. You put him in the second team, And really, the teams can't really figure it out, and it creates a little more space and a little more ball for Kyrie and LeBron. I mean, I do think that, like, that's a smarter play, and David Blatt did this, but, like, Tyronn Lue doesn't, and there's a whole bunch of dysfunction I'm not getting into. But, I mean, that's the point. I mean, I think that I'm not convinced that – I know that Cleveland will not make optimal use of the tools at their disposal. And I think, like, they're getting a guy who's – I mean, I think Stan Van Gundy's a Hall of Fame coach. That's me. What do you think?
I think it's a little bit early, but I think that he is good enough to be in to be in that conversation on a day-to-day basis. I think that he's an excellent coach. Yeah, he's very good at using talent. And one of the things that stands out to me in terms of those who want to bet it is I think there's no chance I would throw money on Cleveland overall in the series just because that's really, really high. I just don't think the return is there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the overall series price is interesting for a punt. And again, what you're kind of thinking is like, is something goes wrong. I mean, I do think Cleveland wins the series. I mean, I don't think this is where they get into trouble. I mean, we'll get into where I think the upsets could be and where the prices are probably off. But like, I mean, I think this is gonna be a more interesting series than people think, and specifically for the reasons we listed. I mean, like, I think that Cleveland's going to have to earn their way to the finals. And I've said this a couple times, like, I like the field in the East to make the finals. I mean, I think, like, last year Cleveland really got lucky that a couple teams had injury. Like, it took an injury to John Wall and the NYPD breaking Tabo Cephalosha's leg to help them get to the finals. I don't think this Cleveland team is better than last year's team. Is this a controversial opinion?
Well, I think it depends on what Cleveland team you're talking about. I mean, because Kyrie was pretty limited in the playoffs, and as much as he, let's say, is disappointing in that sense, he's still
he
a very good basketball.
Though. He hasn't been good this year.
He's been different.
LeBron's been inconsistent, let's say.
He's been good at the end of the year, though. He's playing very well right now, and I think the concern for Detroit in this series is that they don't really have anybody to slow him down. I think Kentavious Caldwell-Pope will do a nice job on Kyrie, but they don't have anybody for LeBron.
This is not the series where he runs into, like, how should I put this, the, like, wrecking ball. But, like, that's the thing. Like, there are series on the slate in the East where teams have players that can throw at him and kind of, like, just kind of make him, like, have trouble. And I think that's something that wasn't there. Like, it used to be he had to get to the finals before he ran into that. But I think this year that's not the case. I mean, he's gonna have some trouble in the East this year.
Yeah, I agree with that. Anything else in this series?
No, I mean, again, I have five. The gentleman sweep is probably the right thing. But I would not be stunned if this goes longer. I really wouldn't.
I wouldn't either. Toronto, Indiana, I feel like I'm one of the only people saying that Indiana has, I'm not going to say they're the favorites, not by any long shot, but I think that they have a better chance in this series than some people give them credit for. They haven't been playing well recently, but I think their ceiling is very dangerous for what Toronto does so well.
Indiana's going off at plus 222, and I know a lot of sharps that just really love that number. They really love that number. They like Indiana. And they're like their series price. I mean, this is, again, Toronto's a bit weird because Toronto really, they haven't done it before. They have this tendency to not win these playoff series. This is a tougher matchup than that. I have Toronto's odds of winning this series right now at 55%.
Wow.
Because here's the thing. I think Indiana, it's fair to say that Indiana has the edge in playoff experience, no?
Yeah, I would think so.
They have the edge in coaching, no?
Yes, definitely.
So if we consider those two things, then right now, I mean, I've got Toronto winning in seven, right? Indiana has like a really good deep. They got George Hill, they got Monte Ellis, they got Turner, they've got a bunch of effective size. They got Paul George. Who's covering Paul George? Is Damari healthy right now?
No, he's getting back, but he's not all the way there yet.
Yeah, so they really don't have anybody kind of to throw at. So I'm going to throw James Johnson. They're not playing James Johnson. I don't know who they're going to throw at Paul George. I think this is like the worst possible draw that I think that Toronto could have gotten in the first round.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think this is going to be one of the more fun series. The fan bases are great for both these teams, and it's going to be nice and passionate. We might get some of these games on NBA TV, but I think they're going to be great. I think this is one of the series I'm looking forward to. Here's the thing. I think if Toronto wants to make the finals, this is a year for them to do it. Because DeMar DeRozan had a career year, and you're not necessarily going to get that. Like, this is the time. I think this is when you do it. It's a very narrow window, and they're going to have to earn it. I think Indiana is a really tough matchup, and it would not surprise me. Like,
right now, like, the, as I said, Indiana's better, worse than 2-1, like, in terms of the betting odds. And I think they're more like a 40-45% to win the series, to me, right? Because Toronto hasn't won any playoff series. And I think Indiana is, like, has been playing well. They're a good team. I've watched them. They're a professional basketball team. They play hard every game. They play defense. They're one of the smartest defensive teams in the league. And they have, like, skilled players at all positions, right? So, I mean, like, this is going to be a really good series.
Yeah, one of the dynamics here that I think will be very important is that Toronto likes to drive, and Indiana is one of the few teams that plays two bigs and is successful with it. So, and when they play Turner and Jan Mahinmi, an underrated guy, together, I think that could pose some real problems for Toronto offensively.
Yeah, Jordan Hill is good, too. I mean, like, no, I mean, I think, again, Indiana is a well-coached team, and they're a team that likes, they're basically a team that plays a playoff style too, because they're going to basically play really tough defense, and really tough defensive teams do better in the playoffs because there's less calls, right? So they're going to Boston. We'll talk about Boston does that a little bit too, which they'll rough it up, and roughing it up actually works in the playoffs. Now Toronto does a little bit of that too, so I think this is going to be a little bit of a throwback series in that both teams are going to kind of slow it down and go at it. But I mean, Indiana's done this before in the playoffs and gone all the way to conference finals. So I mean, I think this goes seven, and I think the Indiana series number is really intriguing. Like, really, like, if you can get 2-1 on that, that's, you might be able to get that better, and I think that's really intriguing.
Yeah.
Steve, what would you put the odds of Toronto winning this, like, of Indiana winning the series at?
35-40 probably, but I'm completely game with the people who have it a little higher than that. I mean, I've said before that it was an underrated possibility.
Yeah, I mean, like, I mean, if I knew that George Hill was 100%, right, and that's, I think that's kind of the issue in this series. And I mean, I don't know that, like, DeMar DeRozan is going to be able to like hold this production too. That's a couple other things. The other thing is, I've been on record saying I really don't like the coaching for Toronto. And I, as I said, this is a veteran team who's been there before, who's really well coached, is a terrible match for Toronto.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on. So the 3-6, you know, was this all this wildness on the last day of the season. It ended up with Miami and the Hornets. How do you feel about that series?
Ooh, this is going to be a fun series. I actually think this is, because I think we both like both these teams, right?
Right.
I mean, I think the Heat got way better. I think one of the tricks with the Heat is, like, how much are they going to play Whiteside? But here's the thing, like, Charlotte is another team that's well coached. They have talent. They figure it out. And they've been amazing in the second half of the season. I mean, I've actually, right now, I've got Charlotte kind of ranked slightly ahead of, in terms of, like, neutral site, I've got Charlotte ranked slightly ahead of the Heat. Now, the Heat have home court. So, and I think that's going to end up being the dominant factor. I mean, I've got them. Well, two things. Everybody on Miami's been here before, right? So, like, this is a playoff veteran team.
Whiteside and Dragic don't have a ton of experience. It's more just everybody else. And, of course, Justice Winslow has none. But it's really everybody else has so much experience that the idea is that it outweighs those guys.
Yeah. I mean, that and, like, I mean, I think, I struggled with coach, and I ended up giving the nod to Olster because, again, you make three finals, you get the nod.
Well, and Clifford's a great coach, but he hasn't really shown much in the playoffs yet, so we'll have to see.
Right. So I have to give that, but I think this is a rough series. I think this is one that definitely goes seven. I mean, I think that, like, in my head, this thing goes seven. I think Miami wins, but
they're going to get the calls too.
Yeah, no, Miami's gonna get the calls, and I think they're gonna. I mean, they're gonna win. I think they're gonna win a couple games on call. This is gonna be a dogfight, because again, I think that, you know, we both love Charlotte, but I can't see them beating Miami without home court in a first round series. I also can't see them going away either. I think this is gonna be a really interesting series. These are two teams that they've played each other a lot. They're division rivals too, and again, the odds are going that Charlotte is +125. Which means, like, this is almost close to even money. This is basically, they're saying, Vegas is basically saying that these teams are even, but Miami has a home court. Same thing we're saying, right?
Yeah, I think that what I could also see in the series, which I think people would find fun, is I definitely think there's a chance that each team wins a game on the opposing team's home floor. So, you know, it goes late, and you have those kind of dramatic swings in a series.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be, do we think this is going to be the most fun series in the first round?
Fun's kind of a hard thing to determine, but I think it will be the closest, like, you know, whether it, in terms of length of games, and also, you know, there might be a blowout or two, or maybe even three, but I think that fun, you know, these teams don't really have the firepower. I think the most fun series might actually be Clippers, Blazers, just depending on how it works out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because it's going to be a West Coast style. This is going to be, this is get, like Miami likes to, same thing, Miami likes to rough it up a little bit. And I think that, like, I mean, my Charlotte wants to run a little more, but it's going to be good basketball. And I think it's going to be enjoyable. And I think that it would not surprise me if Charlotte won this series. I don't think they're going to, though. I do think one thing that plays, and I mentioned this before, is like, basically, I believe the NBA is done with drug testing for the year. So older players who need assistance in terms of cortisone shots are now free to get them. And like, you're going to see that all of a sudden Dwayne Wade can actually jump again. And this is going to play a factor in this series.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really fun just for a couple reasons. And one of the aspects that I think is going to be really prominent at some point in the series is that so many key players in this, you know, on both teams are going to be free agents this year. And it's not for a lot of them, Batum and Whiteside. It's not really about making or losing money because those guys are going to get paid a ton. But people getting a sense of just how good these guys are. Because, yeah, the regular season shows a lot of things. But they're going to be facing quality competition for the most part. They're going to be facing guys that have very different strengths than their own. And how well they do is going to be awesome.
Is Batum covering Joe Johnson in the post in the series?
Maybe. I think they're going to bounce him around a lot. I think Batum might spend some time on Wade.
Makes sense. I mean, I think I was starting to think, it's like, I think that Joe Johnson post up is going to figure prominently in this series. And I'm trying to think what they're going to, they can't throw Lin at him. They can't throw Kemba. So it's going to have to be probably Batum or Scott. Who else would they throw at him?
Yeah. I mean, it would have been MKG, but
it would have been, I was actually thinking that, like, if MKG was like here, it would be really, they were for that weird, the period where they had him, they were like really scary. I mean, again, I think the Hornets are actually a good team. I don't know that we're going to get these Hornets in this shape next year, which is sad because I think this is a really interesting team, but I think it's going to be fun. I think this is the series that probably like the biggest threat Toronto might be coming from this series.
And,
sorry, for Cleveland.
Yeah, for Cleveland. And I think both cases it's true, other than Cleveland for Toronto. But I think that it's also a little bit unfortunate because I would have enjoyed seeing this as the 4-5 and having the winner face Cleveland in the next round and just having that intrigue. Because I wanted Miami to be in the 4-5 because I thought...
Yeah, weirdly, I have the Toronto series as closer than this one, but this is still kind of, it's within the margin. It's like, I've got Miami's 59% to win the series.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Anything else before we move on to the last one?
No, I mean, like, I think we said it. I mean, like, Miami, I can't quite get a handle. I think Miami's really interesting if you were looking for a field bet out of the East.
Yeah, I think that's true. Atlanta, Boston... another series of two teams we like, though I would say in some ways relative to other people, we might like them less than Atlanta and Charlotte. I mean, sorry, than Miami and Charlotte, which the two teams we just talked about. But this series is just going to be a war.
Yeah, I mean, like, I actually think this is not as close as people think. Here's one thing I know. Boston can't cover anybody with size, right? So, I mean, like, it's problematic because of Horford and Millsap. I mean, I think this is not a great matchup for Boston in this series. I mean, if I were Boston, I'd rather be playing somebody like Charlotte or maybe even Miami. I'm not, or like, actually the Raptors probably wouldn't be bad because, like, they, you know, it's Jonas. But Hawks are not a great matchup here. Now, I think, like, also the Hawks have the playoff experience. I think they're also a well-coached team. I give Stevens a little bit of the coaching advantage, but like I kind of think that it's going to be a shorter series than people think. Like the Celtics have also not been playing well recently.
Yeah,
go ahead. I mean, I have this going five, and you know, I'm sad I'm a Celtics fan, but I have this going five, and I look for angles, but not really. And like really, that series is going off at +170 for the Celtics, and I probably think that's a little kind to the Celtics. I mean, like. I've got him at like 33% to win. Like I've given them 1-3 chance to win the series. But like stuff has to break their way. I mean, it's a well-coach team. We know the Celtics can like win these games. But like, I mean, like who's dominating in the series for the Celtics?
Yeah, that's a huge question. And also, just the idea that Boston. So actually, I'll phrase it in terms of Atlanta. Probably makes more sense. Atlanta, one of their weaknesses is that they're more of a deep team than a top-heavy team, though they, of course, have great top-end talent in Horford and Millsap. So the idea is that they lose a little bit more when you go to the condensed playoff formats than some other teams, like, let's say, Cleveland, or I mean, obviously Oklahoma City is probably the poster child for this year, where, you know, there are the Clippers, where their bench is just really bad, and so they're losing, you know, the guys they're shedding are worse. But Boston's another team like that, you know. But they're not. Boston has so much depth, and they have so many good guys that the playoff format doesn't really help them as much.
But what's the best thing that Boston does?
They force turnovers.
Well, Boston is elite at covering wing play, like covering offense on the wing. They're elite at covering point of the ball on the wing and covering ISO play, which is why they give Cleveland fits, which is why they were able to beat Golden State, because they're built to stop that. They suck. I mean, they're horrible at stopping traditional go to the basket offense. And if you've got two guys in Horford and Millsap that can go to the basket, you can feast. Somebody like Boogie can kill the Celtics. Just the league isn't built that way anymore, so it's smart for them for that. But this is the whole thing with, like, the Boston having all these guards. Getting Atlanta's probably the worst possible matchup they could have gotten in the first round.
Yeah.
Because, like, Atlanta's going to get their points from 10 feet in. I mean, they have shooting around it, but they can go to the backboard. It's like if they got San Antonio, it's the same thing. San Antonio can go to the backboard if they need to, back to the basket scorers. And, like, Boston doesn't really have a lot of things to throw at it. So this is kind of a terrible matchup to their strengths, right? It's styles make fights, and I really don't like this style for the Celtics.
And Boston's counter, which they could do against some teams of just going small, doesn't do anything against the Hawks, because the Hawks, Millsap is going to be able to handle Jay Crowder. He's not so versatile that he's going to give them fits.
Right, and then they can go to Dennis Schroeder, and they've got, like, so yeah, no, the Hawks are not a great matchup and they don't have the coaching advantage that they would against some other teams. So I wasn't, as a Celtics fan, I was not excited to get the Hawks in the first round. I actually thought if we got the Heat or the Hornets or somebody of that ilk, it would have been a better fit. Like, so I think the Hawks was the matchup. Again, this is a Celtics fan. The Hawks was the matchup I wanted to avoid in the first round. I did not want that matchup, or at least have home court on it. And, like, I mean, could I see this going longer than five? Sure. But, like, I mean, you know, Stevens is a good team, but, like, I think it's an uphill climb for the Celtics.
Yeah. I think that's definitely a fair way of putting it.
Okay. So, I mean, what are you looking forward to the most out of the East?
Miami-Charlotte. And honestly, if Pacers, Raptors, let's say it's 2-2 going into that game 5 in Toronto, that could be incredible.
Yeah. I mean, because the Toronto fans get into it, and it could be really fun.
And they have a lot of demons. I mean, I think people have talked about it with a lot of other franchises, but this Toronto franchise, they've had wonderful success, if you want to define it, on making the playoffs, you know, having really good regular seasons, but they've struggled, and these fans are very aware of it, and they've lost to teams that were worse than them before, so it wouldn't be the first time that's ever happened. And if the Pacers' talent is healthy, they have a shot. I'm not saying they're the favorites or anything like that, but I think that it's so interesting that Toronto, of all teams, got that again.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, to me, this is in a normal scenario, a normal team would be taking Toronto seriously to maybe challenge the Cavs, but I need them to win a playoff series. And I can't, like, a team that's never won a playoff series, it's really hard for me to think they're going to make the finals. It would be such an uphill climb. Weird stuff would have to happen. And I don't think so. I mean, I think it's interesting. And particularly since I think this particular, like, Raptors core has an expiration date. I don't think this Raptors team, the key core players, I don't think they shouldn't be back next year. I mean, like, Toronto shouldn't pay DeMar DeRozan. I mean, am I crazy in thinking that? Or
you and I are two of the people on this island, and there aren't that many others. But I think that he's having a career year, and this year he's been doing well. But you can't anticipate that this is going to be the new normal.
The problem is, like, he's going to be a max player, like a super max player. And, like, I mean, this is nice if you can guarantee this for 5 years, but even if you can guarantee this for 5 years, I'm not sure you pay him the super max. And, like, I mean, somebody's going to give him a stupid contract, and you're better off. We've seen this before. This is peak year. You should think about, like, you should pay him for the last 3 years. And if you pay him for the last 3 years, he's not a super max player. Let somebody like the Lakers pay him a super max contract. I mean, I think that Toronto's too smart to do this, right? And they really should. I mean, like, they can go out, they can spend that money, like, instead of paying DeMar, just go out and, like, get Batum, right? They're guys you can go out and, like, get for, like, I mean, you probably make a price break on that. So I think, as I said, this is, for this core, I think this is the moment for this core to make a run. I mean, I don't know if they can get, like, you know, if Boston got a bad matchup, I think, like, you know, Indiana's probably as a 2-seed, they're the worst 7-seed you could have gotten. There weren't a lot of good options. Like, I mean, like, if you're choosing between Indiana, Charlotte, and Boston, if you're at Toronto, who do you take?
if it was Indiana, Charlotte, and Boston, with their current health, yeah, I think Charlotte would be kind of a tough matchup for them as well. They do have perimeter defenders, but Indiana, if George Hill can play, George Hill and Paul George defending Lowry and DeRozan's just mean.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, but if you were getting Boston, it's Avery Bradley, right? It's Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder.
But they just don't have as much on the interior to exploit it, and, you know, it's interesting. And I think that one of the things that will make the East so much more fun this year than last year is 1-8, they're just better. These teams, yeah, maybe the top teams are superior, and they're better on paper, but these aren't prohibitive favorites, even in the first round, like we saw last year.
No, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, I think, what do you think about the second round?
So, I'm still not sold on Toronto. So, like, well, let's assume Toronto makes it. Of course, if they don't, then this gets really wild in terms of everything else. I think Cleveland got really lucky that they, you know, Boston can do all right against them if they make it, but I think it's going to be Atlanta, and I think Cleveland is going to just roll through them pretty cleanly. You know, tougher than last year, of course, but, you know, I think that would be there. And then the other side, the 2-7, 3-6, I think that's as you said, that Styles makes fights. You know, we'll see what it turns into, but I could see that series being really, really variable.
Yeah, the worst case scenario for Cleveland is Boston, not Atlanta, because Boston's the worst matchup for them, because Boston actually has elite defenders. They can throw at Kyrie and LeBron and go like, hey, Kevin Love, can you beat us? And it becomes an ego thing. Like, it's an ego thing whether Cleveland's willing to go down that path and do what they should do to win that series. Blatt did it, but I don't know necessarily Tyronn Lue's going to be able to do it. So, I mean, Atlanta's probably the better matchup. So I think that, I mean, Atlanta will make them struggle, but, like, then it becomes an interesting thing who they're going to get in the Eastern Conference final. So who do you think, gun to your head, who do you think is in the Eastern Conference final?
Miami.
Miami and Cleveland, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think Cleveland has a pretty clean path. I mean, it's not easy by any stretch of the imagination, but I think Cleveland is going to get there. The other part, you can make a capable argument for all four teams, but I think Miami has a good chance the way that it shook out, because I think they're going to beat Charlotte. I think it'll be a long series, and then, you know,
let's walk through this. Cleveland and Miami. Who has the experience advantage? Miami or Cleveland?
I think that's pretty close to a neutral, because basically on Cleveland, almost everybody has some experience, and of course LeBron has more than anybody. But Miami has a couple of guys that have a lot. So I would say maybe slight Miami, but not much.
Yeah, I would say slight. I agree with you, slight Miami. Not a full, but like slight Miami. Now, who has the coaching advantage, Cleveland or Miami?
Miami.
So that series I have as Cleveland at 56% to win.
I'd have it a little stronger than that, but not a whole ton stronger.
And then winning in seven. I mean, I could totally see that series just getting completely into LeBron's head, right?
He's played badly in Miami basically every time he's played there since he left.
Gonna get into his head, the Riley thing, like sniping in the press. I would think it would be an epic series. And like, imagine if the rumors start floating around that he's leaving Cleveland to go to Miami, which those are out there. I've heard those. Like, that's not me. I've heard those out there. There are people who think that's going to happen. And so, like, I think it would be on the level of those Boston-Miami series for a few years back. I think it would be really, really interesting. Now, is Bosch maybe playing?
I haven't heard anything. Well, I was actually talking to some people about this last night. What is most concerning to me, both on a, you know, as a basketball fan, but also on a personal level, you know, I've had very few interactions with Chris Bosch, but they've been overwhelmingly positive, is the idea that we've heard nothing. That's really concerning to me, because usually with the way the sports is, you know, whether it's good news or bad news, you hear something. And when you hear nothing, I get a little bit concerned. And, like, I'm not saying it's any sort of analog to this, but I remember when people were saying stuff was going on with Flip, and then you didn't hear anything for a while. Like, that started to freak me out a little bit. And, of course, it was the worst-case scenario. I'm not going to say that is with Chris Bosh, but that's where I go when you hear nothing.
Now, do you remember – are you familiar with the WWE?
Loosely.
Yeah, so are you familiar with Daniel Bryan?
Yes.
It reminds me a bit of the Daniel Bryan thing, where Daniel Bryan kept saying that he wanted to come back, he wanted to do it. And, like, really, there just wasn't any way for him to bring him back because of the concussions, right? So I think Bosch wants to play. My interpretation is he wants to go, but he's not going to get medical clearance, and really it is a life or limb issue. It's the same thing with Bryan. It's like, dude, if you have a bad concussion, it could kill you, right? So it's like, it's the same thing. It's the blood clot. Like, you could literally die. So I think that may be what's at play, and I think that may be kind of what's going there. And I've heard overwhelmingly that he's a nice guy. He's a cool dude. I can understand the drive to want to do something, but like, you know, I don't know necessarily like it's worth his life.
Or agreed.
And I think that's what may be a play for that.
I have a question for you, actually.
Sure.
I've been talking about this with a lot of different people over the last couple of weeks. If you had to choose, and you can use whatever criteria you want, personal enjoyment, basketball intrigue, whatever, would you rather see Warriors Thunder or Warriors Spurs in the Western Conference Finals?
No, I would rather see Warriors Spurs, because we don't, like, when you have two historic teams, and we kind of jumped the gun a little bit, like, so, like, can we get back to that one? Like, okay, so...
Sure.
We think so. Cleveland, Miami, got, like, I would love to see a serious price. I would probably have money on Miami in that series. I think Cleveland wins, but it's going to be a harrowing experience for them. So like,
I think
you
that's
know,
fair.
Yeah, because I think like, you know, you're going to need, Miami's going to throw everything they can. They're going to make sure that like it's not LeBron beating them, right? So it's going to have to be Kyrie, or it's actually going to have to be Kevin Love, because Kyrie, like, Miami's really good at like point guard defense. They're like fantastic at point guard defense. So it's like, it's the big. It's going to have to be really Love going at Whiteside, and it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah.
And like, are they going to actually unleash Whiteside, which is like, I would be fascinated by that series. And I could totally see Miami winning it. And I'm really kind of hoping that's what happens, right? Because that's probably of the matchups that would be the, I mean, other than getting the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals, which, you know, I'm not very hopeful for, I would love to see the Heat and the Cavs in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yep, that's the East series I want to see the most any round.
Let's talk about the West. So in a vacuum, imagine the Golden State Warriors don't exist, right? Right? Golden State Warriors do not exist. I mean, like, we think, like, if that's the case, we think San Antonio's like a sure thing to win the finals, right? To win the title.
They would have very good odds. You know, sure thing is a little bit shaky just because I don't totally trust their offense, but their defense is ridiculous and they have so much talent and they're well coached. So yeah, they would be prohibitive favorites.
OKC is not been good against good teams, right? Their differential versus bad teams versus good teams is really significant. So, I mean, how should I put this? I don't know. I mean, I don't see a scenario where I see OKC beating San Antonio in a seven game series, particularly since like Leonard basically kind of beats the crap out of Durant. So really it all has to be Westbrook. And I think like with LMA, I think that it just, San Antonio just has way too much.
And Tim Duncan has a place in that series that he doesn't against the Warriors.
Right, and the other thing is, like, you know, they're just guys on the Thunder that really should not be on the court against San Antonio, the Warriors. That's the biggest problem. And this is, again, these are a good team. The problem is, like, you know, and good gearing towards great with those players. The problem is, like, San Antonio and Golden State are a historically great team. And it's really hard for you to, like, it's just, like, kind of a different speed and a different gear. And, again, both those teams actually have enough kind of, as I said, like, you know, like, both these teams, like Golden State and San Antonio, can just basically go like and just neutralize the primary weapons for the Thunder. You know, between with Draymond and Kawhi, they can just go like, and Danny Green and Clay, Andre Iguodala, they can just say like, we're going to screw you on the wing and we're going to screw your ISO play. What are you going to do? Right. So like, what's the answer? Throw Cantor out there? You can't throw Cantor out there against Golden State and San Antonio, right?
Yeah, I think that's a big thing. But also, wherever you put Durant, you can put Kawhi on him, and the Spurs are so much better depth-wise that they're, as you were kind of talking about, there's no way that Oklahoma City can distribute their talent. Like, this gets into this idea that I talked about when Indy was dancing around the idea of playing Paul George at the four. And my concept with that, which proved to be right, which, not that I'm, some sort of genius, is that when you play a guy like that, let's say nominally at the four, really what you're doing is you're playing the guy who's playing next to him at the four, because no competent team, if they have a good defensive small forward, is ever going to say, oh, well, you know, CJ Miles is the third tallest guy, so we're going to put, you know, we're going to put our Kawhi Leonard on CJ Miles instead of on Paul George. The problem for Oklahoma City is whatever move they want to do in that direction, because their wing depth in particular isn't that good, San Antonio's going to say, cool, we got you. And there's no way that they can do that. And they're always going to be sitting there with Kawhi Leonard. And I think that the Spurs actually, in some ways, match up better with Oklahoma City because they are the best suited team in recent history to take away what Oklahoma City wants to do because, you know, they want to play ISO, and Kevin Durant ISO, he's the best isolation basketball player in the world right now, but Kawhi Leonard could have been built in a lab to stop Kevin Durant isolation.
If you look at, like, the elite small forwards versus Kawhi Leonard, you can look this up in Basketball Reference, you look him, like if you play fantasy sports, you do not start elite small forwards against Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard eats them up. Like he really just does bad things to them. Like Paul George was broken for a month after the last time he played San Antonio. Like his jump shot Kawhi just destroyed his jump shot. He just took him out of his game. And really that's kind of the problem. Like, so he's gonna, like, so here's the thing, San Antonio, they're gonna take Durant out of the game, right? Kawhi's gonna take him out. Right. And then they have elite defender. They can cover everybody else. So really it's down on Russ. And I mean, the other problem is like, okay, so if you're looking for a plan B, you put Kanter on, then just LMA and Tim Duncan and Boris, what are you going to do with these guys? Right.
Then you play LaMarcus at center and just put Enes Kanter in space. And he's not going to beat you on the block. You know, you can help onto him and things like that. He's not, I don't think that OKC has a counter that Spurs can answer. I don't think it exists.
Right. And like, I mean, like, worst having, like, even when you throw the bench unit out there, so Kanter's out there. Okay. So I'm going to throw Boban out there for, like, it's just kind of Jesus Christ.
Or David,
like,
West. I mean, David West brings a different, a different element, but, you know, Kanter's not going to bruise him.
What is he doing with Boris Diaw? I mean, like, God, like the Spurs just have too many guys for me to think that, like, the Thunder can just, Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not.
And I think that's good for the Warriors in a way, because I think the Warriors, you know, the Spurs are a wonderful team, and they're going to do, if that series happens, they'll do well. But there is something undeniably interesting about, with the Warriors, who do not have that perimeter guy like Kawhi, because there's only one Kawhi Leonard, where the Thunder, in a way, when those guys get going against the Warriors, which they will do differently than against the Spurs, you know, they do have this kind of supernova high ceiling still, despite their relative lack of talent compared to these other two teams, that would make that series really compelling. I just don't think we're going
to
see it.
Yeah, I mean, like, it comes down to this. Like, so what is there? Like, have the Thunder actually beaten? I don't think the Thunder have actually beaten them this year. I think the Thunder gave them the best punch and couldn't get it done, right? So I have a hard time thinking, like, either one. I mean, I'm not, from basketball perspective, I'm not interested in seeing the Thunder get mauled by the Warriors.
I am for a couple reasons, but I agree with you that, and also I feel like we would be cheated if we didn't see Warriors Spurs this year, given how historic those two teams were.
I think that's what we want. And I think that's what we're going to get, barring something like just utters. Like, again, like, whereas, I mean, the Warriors resting people in the fourth quarter, but, like, the Spurs were taking games off, right? Like, the Spurs, you didn't know, like, they weren't playing guys half the season. They were playing super short rotations. Like, and the Spurs won, what, 60, is it 66 games that they won? Jesus Christ.
I think it was 66.
The Spurs did, like, put up, they had a 10-point point margin. They won 67 games, and they took whole games off. Like, they just said, hey, just, no, don't worry. Just, you're not playing today. Just go off. And really kind of, you know, they're an insanely good team. So after the Warriors beat the Spurs the last two games they played, it was like, oh no, the Warriors are a bad matchup for the Spurs. They can't beat them. Now, you and I have talked about this before. Do you think the Warriors got the Spurs a game in those two games?
No, but I don't think that the offensively, defensively, I think the Spurs have another couple years. But offensively, I think the Warriors, will do a good job stopping San Antonio's offense. Even if they add wrinkles, I just don't think they have the horses to do it. But that doesn't mean that the Spurs can't win the series. They can win a mucked up series.
I think that you said it. I think what we can, I think basically they got the A game for a half. The first half of that second game. Basically San Antonio threw a little bit of the kitchen sink at them. Now they didn't have Diaw, which I think Diaw is a key player in this. But they threw the kitchen sink and it was close. And I think that's what said. Like, again, I think Pop is kind of, we know this. I don't think Pop cared about winning those two games. He wanted to put off some stuff. Now LaMarcus got his finger bent a little bit, and he's key in that series. And I think Diaw's kind of key as well. So I mean, I think it's going to be a really close series. I think these teams are like, I mean, I have these two teams as dead even. I think it really does come down to the home court, which the Warriors got, but I could really see this going either way. I mean, like, and I'm going to, okay, so let's walk through this Golden State San Antonio series. We just say what we want, right? So Golden State San Antonio, who has, I think it's dead even on swagger. And I think, do we think it's dead even on coaching?
I'd say it's close enough. I don't think I would feel comfortable giving Spurs any sort of notable edge. And I think Kerr did a better job last season making in series adjustments than Popovich has in recent years. But that's I wouldn't necessarily give them an advantage.
Yeah, I just ran it and it's bat out Spurs in six.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, it's close. I mean, it says home team win percent. This is the most likely outcome. Spurs in six, but it actually has the Warriors winning the series 50.6% of the time. It's just saying that the most likely outcome is Spurs in six.
Basically, right? Because the Warriors, if the Warriors won, they would win in five, six, or seven. But if the Spurs win, they'll win in six.
Yeah, it's saying that the most likely outcome is Spurs winning in six.
Like the mode. It's the mode of the outcomes.
You know what the series is, right? This is the Miami. This is the Heat Spurs in 2012. In Spurs.
The Ray Allen one. That was
the Ray Allen. It's 2012, right? 2012.
That was 2013. Right.
2013. So that series, which is like the most likely outcome is Spurs in six. And that series, the most likely outcome was Spurs in six. And the Heat just barely like survived to win it in seven. So like basically the Heat, like I think it's the same thing. The Warriors are slightly favored, but like if probably the most likely outcome is in six, it's a dead even. I think anything could happen. I think it's going to be, it has a chance. I think the 2013 finals is the best series I've ever seen. And this has the chance to be that close.
It does. One thing I think I'll leave you on is we're recording this on Thursday. It'll be released on Friday. Are there any series that you think after just game one that people will be thinking about, maybe not us, but people will be thinking about fundamentally differently than they are right now?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think that...
I'll tell you that I think Boston-Atlanta, if Atlanta wins that game by 10+, I think people will start to go, oh, this is, you know, they'll start to say the stuff like Millsap's a really bad cover for Boston. Oh, they're going to have so much trouble with Al Horford, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think Atlanta might be overrated coming out of that series.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think, I agree with that. But like, I'm saying like, and whoever wins that, people are already on Miami. So I think that like the team that could get wrongly rated based on like being good in that first round is Atlanta. What about Clippers? Do you think the Clippers have I think the Clippers have a better shot at the Warriors than like the Thunder, in my opinion.
I disagree with that pretty strongly. I think that the Clippers don't have a ton of things that they can really pull out that the Warriors can't stop. And the biggest part of that is also that their perimeter defense is basically Chris Paul and a bunch of guys who aren't that good. And the Clippers are great. They're, you know, they have, and also I think Doc is overrated as a postseason coach. He's not terrible. You know, there's a difference between being overrated and being bad. I definitely don't think he's bad. I just think he's overrated. But I think that the Clippers, they just don't have that. But it gets into this weird thing with them. Cause of course I cover the Warriors. So I've been at a lot of these games and I've of course watched all of them. The Clippers regularly give the Warriors a really good game, but they almost always lose. And so how you feel about that is kind of a challenge, you know? So, like, if a team always plays somebody well, if the games are almost always close, you know, the Clippers could have won, I think, two or maybe even three of the times they played this year. But they didn't, so they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to me is how good is... And I think it's the same thing that happened with the Spurs last year. It's like, so if Blake Griffin is on, who's covering Blake Griffin on the Warriors?
Draymond. There's no one else. There's no one else they have to put Draymond on.
Yeah, that's problematic. So, I mean, like, the Clippers... puncher's chance is the same thing as San Antonio's series last year. The puncher's chance is Chris Paul basically kind of neutralizing Curry, which in turn kind of neutralizes Clay a little bit, and then like having Blake kind of, you know, be like super Blake. And we've seen Blake be like amazing in the playoffs before, which is kind of interesting. Now I don't think it's a likely odds, but I do think I like the Clippers odds against the Warriors better than the Warriors. For those reasons. And I also
better
think, like,
than the
DeAndre,
Thunder, you mean?
Yeah, but the other thing is, like, DeAndre is a kind of a bad matchup for them. It's like, so who are you throwing at DeAndre? It's like the size, the skill size is problematic.
Yeah, but their bench is so bad. Like, the Warriors bench is shaky, but the Clippers bench is terrible.
That is a fair assessment. That's
and
not...
Doc doesn't use them well. I mean, so the last question I ever asked Mark Jackson when he was still the coach of the Warriors, which was during that Clippers series, was a version it asked inartfully, basically, why hadn't Mark Jackson adjusted to the fact that Doc Rivers never changes his rotations? And Mark Jackson basically said, oh, we're going to do our thing. And I guarantee you that Steve Kerr will not do that. If Doc keeps his rotations rigid, the Warriors will exploit everything out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm kind of thinking that maybe that the Clippers, for this to work, the Clippers would have to just go through like a caveman, like 40-minute rotation for everybody, which they kind of did in that Spurs. I'm kind of going by what they did in the Spurs series last year.
Well, and this might be their last gasp too. You know, we talked about it with Oklahoma City. While their players are all under contract, you know, if they lost to the Blazers, I think that opens the door for all this kind of stuff. But let's say they got swept by the Warriors. I think that opens the door for them to consider some crazy stuff as well.
There's noise out there about like Chris Paul or Blake Griffin getting moved. I do agree with you that that's out there. I actually think that Clippers Warriors could be a fun, just for the fact, like, I mean, like, you know, I mean, just for watching the Clippers make, like, you know, the thing is, the Clippers are, like, gonna blow games they should win, right? Kind of like the last year's, like, they're gonna blow games that you're like, how in the world did they blow this game, right? They did that against the Rockets, and I think that's interesting. If the Clippers and the Thunder were playing a series, I'd probably pick the Clippers, right? I think that team's more talented than the Thunder. They both have the problem, it's like, once you get into their bench, it's just like, it's a wasteland, which is a problem against the Warriors and the Spurs. They're going to exploit that. So, yeah. Again, I think what we want is Spurs-Warriors. Now, do we think that, okay, Spurs-Warriors, whoever survives, is winning the title?
Yes, absolutely.
Like, what odds would you give, like, say, Cleveland to win the title?
Right now? Yeah. Or if they make the finals?
Yeah.
20 to 25%, maybe?
Assuming somebody gets hurt. I think here's the thing.
Oh no! Assuming somebody gets hurt is weird, but I don't think either one of the Spurs or Warriors is good enough to survive to make it to the finals with one of their guys being hurt.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, I think that's kind of the key. Yeah, I mean, I think like teams that are as good as the Spurs and the Warriors typically win the title, except when they face each other. That's kind of what history tells us. I don't think this Cleveland team is as good as last year, so there isn't anybody in the East coming out. So again, I think it's going to come down to the Western Conference Final, and I would feel cheated if we didn't get Spurs Warriors like in their prime. We've got them like ships passing in the night. So we've got them when the Warriors weren't quite as good, but we haven't gotten the Kerr Warriors against like the Kawhi Pop Spurs. We haven't gotten that in a playoff series, and I think I think we probably should before Tim Duncan retires. Now, I don't think the Spurs are going away even when Tim Duncan is retires. And these guys, because like they've done a really good job at reloading, but I would really like to see it before the big three are no more. You know, I think we're kind of, I mean, we got to be close. I mean, like,
yeah,
you think
I feel that way, but I also feel the same way about a Warriors Thunder series before they break up. You know, that we've never seen that at all. You know, I think it would be a shame if we never saw that either.
Yeah, I mean, I still hold to the fact that I think we're gonna get Kevin Durant coming out of the East, right? So I think that's the future. But that's just me being,
Yeah, Kevin Durant versus the Warriors could happen in another form on a similarly good team. That's certainly a possibility.
Right. Particularly now that like some of the decks have been cleared in the nation's capital. We'll see. I mean, I think, as I said, I think there's some interesting things in play in this offseason. But I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I don't think we're going to get like a massive first round, but there's some fun series. The really interesting thing is I think the fun series we're going to have to search on NBA TV.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the high profile ones might not be as interesting. But what I feel is that this first round is going to set up a truly awesome second round in a lot of different ways.
Agree. We both agree on that.
Okay. Anything else?
No, I think, is there anything, okay, so is there one more thing you're looking forward to in the playoffs?
What could be fun this year is, well, so what I'm looking at, and we've talked about this a little bit, I actually mentioned it with the with the Miami-Charlotte series, is the offseason is going to be so open and so crazy, I've written a lot about this for the Sporting News, and we'll write a lot more about this before it happens, that I think it's going to start permeating the playoffs, not in the way of, you know, affecting the way that people think about the games, but realizing, you know, you're watching Nikola Batum or Hassan Whiteside or Kevin Durant and realizing, oh God, all these guys are free agents. And not only that, but some of the teams that do well will, you know, let's say Indiana, either whether they win the series or not, let's say they push that late. people are going to realize, oh God, they have max space. You know, like teams like that, like Boston, are going to be able to do that. And so the possibility, which is what I was kind of getting at when I wrote the KD to the Warriors piece, is that what makes this year so crazy is that the best, and in some ways more importantly, the near best, can get a whole lot better really soon.
There's a theory, and I believe it's called Stokes' theorem, and I have to look it up. I'm probably getting this wrong, which says that assets tend to move, particularly when there's no restriction on freedom of movement. They're going to move to where they have most value to the enterprise or to the economy. And what that means in general terms is, like, free agents are going to move to the good teams and or where they are, the large markets. So you're going to see with like, everybody has money. Like, money is not no issue. Like, the best players are going to go to the best teams, and this is going to start looking like the 80s. So it's going to become like, there's going to be like a segregation between great teams and like not so great teams. And people will like cry and complain about this. But here's the thing. There's a lot of data that kind of shows that like that accumulation at the top, the really great teams, is really, really good for the bottom line and the ratings of the league. Right. So this is convenient. The league kind of gets in the way of that, but it's actually, this is really good. It happens in the Premier League in Europe. It happens in football sometimes. Like, well, football's parity, but like, it, like having these super teams playing each other, it is really good. So there's a lot of talent that's like guys, you mentioned guys like Batum that are going to move. Like, things like Aldridge are going to happen more often.
Yeah. Right? I think they're going to happen a lot.
Because the money is no object. So guys are going to go either home or they're going to go to places they like or good business places. And like, if you have to choose between working for, I mean, Portland's a nice place to work, but you know, I think LaMarcus, I don't think there's an argument that LaMarcus made the right choice.
Yeah.
Right?
But I think Batum might go back, which would be really fun.
Portland?
Yeah.
Ah, geez. I mean, does he go to Portland? Like, where is he from though?
He's from France. He can't go back to France. Well, he could, but I don't think he will.
Batum is interesting. Like, couldn't you see Batum winding up on Golden State?
The challenge there is that the way that the Warriors would have to clear the decks for an elite player is so extreme that I don't think they'd do it for anybody less than Durant. If Al Horford said yes, I don't think they would do the moves they would have to do to clear
space. Yeah, but you know that Batum would be a really good fit for that core.
Oh, for sure. He'd be fantastic, because, like,
If you need a defensive stopper, like, you need a defensive stopper on the wing who can shoot threes. He's like tailor made for. If you can't get Kevin Durant, like, Batum is tailor made for the Warriors.
The other possibility that is, it's kind of outside the realm, but it is worth mentioning, is the idea of, theoretically, if Harrison Barnes wanted to go, I wrote about this a couple weeks ago. If Harrison Barnes wanted to go to a place like Charlotte, then you could make something like that happen. But the problem for the Warriors is, because then you could do a kind of a double sign and trade. But the challenge for that is, if you're the Warriors, is you have to get a meeting with Nicolas Batum when you don't have cap space. And a lot of guys just aren't comfortable with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, but I said, there's a lot of things that are in play.
Yeah, sure.
Like
right, Miami, then, I don't think people are talking about it. Like, Miami's in play with a lot of these guys. Just Boston, well, you know, there are some crazy situations.
This is why I don't get why people don't understand this. Miami's always in play. Miami is...
Durant might go
like,
there.
Here's the thing, like, and I said this, that people either go, like, they either stay, they go home, they go to be with their buddies, or they go to Miami. That's what they do in the modern NBA. Like, if it's none of the above, Miami is always in play.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree with that.
To shadow GM, it's Riley. Riley gets, I mean, I would not put it past him to get that. What do you think of that rumor, and I think we've closed on this, what do you think of that rumor that, like, LeBron wants to play with, like, Paul, like, the banana boat rumor? He wants to play with Chris Paul and Wade and Carmelo once before they retire.
I think there's a lot of credence to it, and I think what's crazy is that some have talked about the idea of it happening somewhere else, and I think that if they were amenable to it, the most logical place for it to happen would actually be in Cleveland, because Cleveland they're such a good team right now that they could actually trade away guys in deals that would be competent. So, like, let's say they need to get Chris Paul. Okay, you can trade Kyrie Irving for him. The Clippers would do that trade. You know,
wouldn't it be New York though?
It could be New York as well. Like, it could be New York. It could be, but the challenge with that is, unless they're crazy enough to move Porzingis or something, I don't think that I think that it'd be a challenge. But it is possible.
Yeah, it's the banana boat team. And actually, here's the thing. Actually, they could actually pull that off. I think it would be more like Brooklyn Nets at this point, because I don't know how long LeBron has left as an elite basketball player. This year might have been like last gasp, and they're like. There are people coming. Like, you know, we've already got Curry and Towns is coming, and he looks like he's going to be the next dominant force. Now, I don't know if he's going to be on a good team, But he did. The next guys are already kind of here, you know.
Yeah.
So why is he here?
Well, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what's going to happen. But I think that there is that possibility again. That goes with the idea of an open summer. And if Cleveland, you know, if they do anything that's really different, and not only Cleveland, you know, I think it would take. Well, Melo's already, his season's done. But if, you know, if Chris Paul wants to move on that, because whatever it's going to take with those guys is kind of an understanding that they all want to do it. You know, you need, it's kind of like a submarine. You need to turn all those keys at the same time. But I certainly think it's a possibility.
It's not a submarine. It's a banana boat.
Yeah, it's a banana. It's a banana boat submarine. But but thank you so much for taking the time. Always a pleasure, man.
Yeah, it was fun, man. Like, let's do this again a little later in the playoffs.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see where this goes. Thanks again to Arturo Galletti for taking the time to come on. You can read him on Basketball Numbers, and you can also follow him on Twitter at Arturo Galletti, ArturoGalletti. Love doing these kind of previews. We're going to hope to do one of these for each round of the playoffs. I'd like to do it with a different guest just to change up the tone and, you know, see what we learned and everything like that. So we'll see how that actually works. And as a weekly podcast, the way that the playoffs work, it will not be, you know, that will not be the entirety of what we do on Real Jam Radio. I want to do some things focused on the eliminated, the teams that are out that I think are most interesting. I already talked to some potential guests about that. And it's going to be a really fun run. Arturo and I talked kind of at length about this, about how excited we are about the playoffs. And there are plenty of legitimate reasons for that. So we will have more than enough material there as well. And as, of course, those of you who read my work know, I'm very focused on the offseason as well. I think that this is going to be one of the most impactful ones in league history, despite not having that great a free agent class. I mean, it's not terrible, of course. Kevin Durant's wonderful, and Horford, and Mike Conley, and a lot of talented guys. But it is going to be different in that way. And so you can read my work, Real GM, Sporting News, love doing it, and we'll have an announcement with my Warriors work, actually, that's going to be at a new location, but that's not ready to be announced publicly yet, but I'm very, very excited about that. So you can follow me on Twitter and also respond to anything on the podcast, good, positive, negative, whatever you want to do. That will be at Danny LaRue, DannyLeroux. You can also hit me up on Facebook, Danny LaRue NBA, which is a compilation of all of the stuff that I do, pieces, podcasts, recommendations, all that kind of fun stuff. Have a mailing list. The link will be both there in my Twitter bio. And also you can email me, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com. My standard line, and it's standard because it's the truth, is I read everything that comes and I respond to as much as I can. And it's a very hectic time for me. That's not a surprise. It's not an excuse. It's not a surprise. So I will read it if you send something, whether it be about the podcast or really whatever, and I will respond when I can, but I can't promise that will be rapid because I get a lot of stuff, and of course I have substantial obligations both in podcast form with this and Dunked On and everything else that I do, which is wonderful, and I'm thankful every day that I get to do it. So thank you so much for listening. Take care, and make it a great day.